Well, if a prevention and cure isn't found, experts estimate that between 14 and 16 million Americans will have Alzheimer's disease by 2050. And the cost to patient and caregiver, I tell you, it's physically and emotionally devastating. And our guest now, Dr. Edward Shaw, is one of the authors of a new book that looks at how to keep your emotional connection with a memory-impaired loved one. When Dr. Shaw's wife, Rebecca, was diagnosed with early-onset Alzheimer's at the age of 54, Dr. Shaw's medical interest shifted to dementia diagnosis and treatment, and he founded the Memory Counseling Program at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The book he co-authored is called Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade, and we'll talk with him about what you can do to make your loved one's journey with Alzheimer's disease easier for both of you. You may have firsthand experience with Alzheimer's disease. What helped you get through? What questions do you have about helping someone you love with Alzheimer's disease? I hope you can join in our conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And thank you for being with us, Dr. Shaw. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry, for having me.
I understand your wife recently passed away. I'm sorry for your loss, for sure. How did her diagnosis change your professional life? Talk a bit about that.
Well, Larry, I was trained initially as a radiation oncologist, a cancer doctor, and my area of specialty was treating adults and kids who had brain tumors. I've always worked in an academic setting, and my research since the beginning of my career 30 years ago has focused on how cancer and cancer diagnosis and cancer treatments affect cognitive functions, so things like memory, language function. And so when Rebecca began having memory issues at age 53, 54, I definitely knew something was wrong, and eventually she was diagnosed as having early-onset Alzheimer's disease. And at that time, our daughters were 18, 20, and 22 years old, and we were just devastated by the diagnosis. It was almost too hard to believe it was true, but then the prognosis was, you know, 8 to 10 years life expectancy and no effective treatment, nothing really even to try and slow the disease down. And there were just no emotional supports for us as we began this journey with my wife, Rebecca, and their mother, their mom, having this terrible disease. And I guess, Larry, I felt a calling to try and do something about that, to try and partner with others who are on a similar journey. And so I wound up dropping back to 50% practice and enrolling in a graduate program at Wake Forest to get a master's degree in mental health counseling. And then, as you mentioned, 2011, I started what's called the Memory Counseling Program at Wake Forest Baptist Health. And this is where individuals who are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia and their spouse or their adult children, just whoever's on the journey with them, we support them through counseling activities and support groups. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, I completely stopped practicing oncology and have just dedicated both my medical and now my mental health professional life with helping people on the journey.
And part of that help, of course, comes from the book that you co-authored, Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade. And your audience for this, I think I see your audience, but maybe you can talk about who you feel your audience is for this book.
Well, I think the audience is probably mostly focused on what we call the care partner. So that would be the spouse or the adult child who is on the journey with their husband or their wife or her mom or dad who has the disease. Because the what I recognize with Rebecca was a gradual deterioration in her ability to express her love for me. And 3 years before she passed away, she actually no longer recognized me as her husband. But it was very important to me, it was very important to our daughters, that we continue to love her. And that's really what prompted the writing of the book, was wanting to keep the love alive, even though her memory and her other cognitive functions were fading.
And you know, that is a noble and certainly, I feel, necessary thing to do. My own mother died from Alzheimer's as well, and my sister was the primary caregiver for her. But you might talk about what happens to relationships. You were going for love, but sometimes it's really hard to love someone who's diagnosed with Alzheimer's, or not diagnosed, but going through those stages that you talk about.
Yes, and so the disease, you know, it begins really with short-term memory loss. And then over that period of 8 to 10 years, the person gradually loses their other cognitive functions. So there's both short-term and long-term memory. There's a function called executive function, which is your ability to plan, problem solve, and multitask. There's a language function, and there's a spatial function. And so all of these things, as they begin to erode, as the disease progresses, it just makes the relationship less of a 50-50 partnership, and the burden for the relationship, particularly the burden for expressing the love in the relationship, falls more on the spouse or the adult children, you know, who the care partners or caregivers are for that person. And it's probably the hardest thing that I have to tell caregivers when I'm doing counseling is, you know, you already are wearing a heavy backpack if you think about that metaphor of having to do physical care for your loved one. But there's also the emotional care. And in fact, you're going to carry that aspect of the relationship as well. The weight of your backpack is going to become even heavier. And that's really what sort of sparked the thought that maybe the five love languages would help make it easier for a spouse or an adult child to be able to express love to their husband or wife or parent. So,
and you know, the five love languages that you talk about are, let me think, words of affirmation, there's quality time, receiving gifts, physical touch, and the last one,
acts of service.
Acts of service, yes. And then you talk about each of those in your book. And it's, I mean, it can be, my sister was really good at it, but, and I think the rest of my brothers were as well, but preventing a relationship from falling apart, I mean, it's all on you as the caregiver, and preventing that relationship from falling apart is a difficult thing.
It is difficult, and but it's also extremely rewarding. And so, when you're able to reach your loved one through one or more of the five love languages, and you see their response, you know, which may be a smile or them reaching over and touching you, or maybe even, you know, even if they hadn't said words that were understandable for weeks or months, they may come out with an "I love you," and you realize that even though things have changed so dramatically, that you can have a certain level of emotional intimacy with somebody who has Alzheimer's disease, and they're able, in their own way, to participate in the relationship. And it can just be such a rewarding experience when you're able to help make that happen.
You talk about love as a feeling and love as an action, and maybe you could talk about the differences between those two, love as a feeling and love as an action.
It's a good question. I think when you and I think about love in the context of, you know, maybe family relationships or friendships, we're thinking about more the feeling we get when we're loved by somebody who loves us, or when we express love. And so whichever of the five love languages is your primary love language, you know, it may be, say, physical touch. And so when you give somebody you love a hug, for instance, you get this sort of warm feeling inside your body because you're expressing that love to them. If they're hugging you back, you know, that may even promote that feeling to be stronger. But for the person who has Alzheimer's disease, for your loved one, you know, because what the disease is really chipping away at is their ability to express their love, the burden falls back on you. And so then the notion is that love is a verb. It's something that you have to choose to do. And in the second chapter of the book, we talk about this this Hebrew word called hesed, which is a choice-driven, sort of intentional, sacrificial love that you have to be aware of the importance of sharing that love, not just so your spouse or your parent is going to feel loved, but also for you as the primary care partner or caregiver, you know, to, as Gary Chapman would say, the originator of the five love languages, to keep your own emotional love tank filled, because you need physical energy, you need emotional energy, you need spiritual energy to be on this journey as a caregiver, and being able to express your love can fill your own love tank too.
Yeah. A listener posted on Facebook, they found that the one thing that remained throughout the loss of all else was the capacity to love and express that love in small but real ways. Mm-hmm. And choose to be fully present, to pay attention and slow down, listen carefully, talk less. In the end, their parents showed us all that love really is all that matters and was the only thing that remained when the mind had long forgotten all else. And we're going to take that up. Need to take a quick look at the news, then we'll be back with our guest. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Dr. Edward Shaw. He is one of the authors of a new book that looks at how to keep your emotional connection with a memory-impaired loved one. When Dr. Shaw's wife was diagnosed with early-onset Alzheimer's at the age of 53, 54, his medical interest shifted to dementia diagnosis and treatment. He founded the Memory Council Program at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The book he co-authored is called Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade. You may have a question about helping someone you love care for an Alzheimer's patient. I hope you'll join in. There may be an experience to share. Join in at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Dr. Shaw, I want to go back to that listener post. I think the listener was a member of perhaps a support group. Posted they found the one thing that remained throughout the loss of all else was the capacity to love and express that love in small but real ways. Choose to be fully present, pay attention, and slow down. Listen carefully, talk less maybe. In the end, their parents showered them with love. Really, that's all that matters, and was the only thing that remained when the mind had long forgotten all else. I thought that was very well put.
It's a beautiful picture of how that particular family was able to continue loving the person who had Alzheimer's disease. And I hear in that description, too, not only did their loved one with Alzheimer's benefit from the relationship, but they also did as well. And I think this is an important point that, you know, within a family, there are often individuals who will be more active in the care of, let's say, a parent or a spouse, or and other individuals who will be less involved. And you know, it can be very hard to visit a loved one, especially when they're late in the stage with Alzheimer's disease. But one of the things I'll say to families is, you know, to think about at the end of your loved one's journey, when you look back on what you did to try and maintain your love with them, you know, are you gonna feel like you did everything that you could to share that love, and being proactive with the emotional aspect of this can really help after that person's journey with Alzheimer's has ended. You don't have feelings of guilt.
I wish I'd had a copy of your book when my mother was going through this. I did some, and you have some very good suggestions, I think, for those of us who are going through that or who went through that, and very good tips and ideas about how people can show love and respect through every phase. And I think the book does a wonderful job in that respect. And I wish I'd had it with me, because there are some things as I read the book, I thought, I did not do that. I wish I had. Some things I was pretty good at, and others I thought, you know what, I could have done a better job. And so there's that sort of guilt that I'm sure all of us who go through this might have in retrospect, as you pointed out. Go ahead.
Just to encourage you, you know, I think often caregivers will look back and say, they'll do what I call the what ifs. Well, what if I had spent more time with them, or what if I had done this, or what if I had done that? But this is a really hard journey, being the care partner, the caregiver for somebody who has Alzheimer's or one of the other common dementias. And I've said that you can take the most physically, emotionally, and spiritually strong individual, and there are times during the caregiving journey where this disease will break you. And so I guess the notion I'd share with you is that you can only do the best you can do, and you can't do better than that. And so in the context of the rest of your life, you know, the amount of time that you spent was probably the best that you were able to do, given all the other life circumstances you have with your own family, your own career. And I think it's important to take some of that burden away.
Thank you for that. And probably others are thinking along the same lines as me. And so I think it's useful for everyone. Lynn in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go to the phones and to Lynn. Lynn, thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry, and to your guest. And there's not one of us, I don't believe, who hasn't been touched by this. And it is a hard road to hoe. I do have a question. Several years ago, my husband's aunt was stricken with Alzheimer's. We hadn't seen her eyes. She wasn't communicative. She had been just kind of, you know, tethered to a chair. She and her husband had been married for 72 years. They were in the same facility. He wouldn't leave her. He was dying. We went up. Very long story short is she snapped to attention. She recited the 23rd Psalm with my mother-in-law and my husband. She cried over her husband. And she read the name tag of the orderly who brought her into the room. She thanked him. And then she went away again until she passed. Is there any answer to how, why? She was completely lucid for those brief, maybe 10 minutes.
Oh. Dr.
What
Shaw?
A story. Yeah. What a wonderful story. And it's interesting because this is very common that people who have even very advanced Alzheimer's disease and are near the end of life, that they'll have these, it could be a few minutes, it could be a few hours, it could be a few days where they'll be much more lucid, they'll be much more communicative, and then it almost is a prelude to then the very end of the disease. And I'm not sure that I can completely explain it medically, because Alzheimer's is a neurodegenerative disease, and so over time, the individual's neurons, the fibers that make up their brain, are gradually dying, and more die as time passes. On the other hand, the way our brain functions, all the cognitive things we do, like memory and language, these are chemical processes in the brain, and it's possible maybe with better sleep or maybe just the feeling of being loved that the person can have sort of a chemical burst, and that can show itself as being more lucid and more communicative and interactive. So that's more or less a guess, but it's very, very common. You'll just hear this from many spouses and adult children who are talking about the last days or weeks of their loved one's life.
Hmm. Lynn, thank you for calling and sharing that with us. Appreciate it. I want to give Leslie a chance to join us from Sheffield, Minnesota next. Leslie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. My grandma and my mom both died of Alzheimer's, but I just it struck me when you said, or when your guest said, slowing down and taking time. I just have a little story about the two different ways my sister and I handled my mom. Mm-hmm. We have five brothers, and they were far away, so they didn't have much of the caregiving, but we were each 7 miles away. And my sister would often just go and clean for mom or help her or tidy her kitchen or just do all these different things like that in her little room. But first, I wanted to just bust her out. I wanted to be like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and get her the heck out of that place one last time each time. But I found that that wasn't really good because she'd get kind of paranoid, and she felt most comfortable in that little room. So then I had to kind of get rid of that idea and go to just being with her. And I would just sit. I would never just clean her room or do anything that I thought poop on that. I would just sit with her and hold her hand always and just talk with her. And she, you could tell she didn't know what I was saying at all. But after a while, you'd hit something and she would come back. And that was the best feeling ever, to have them be lucid again for one last time. And then each time I tried it, it would be like, let's see if I can get mom to come back this time. And towards the end, you couldn't at all. But those few times have just sustained me.
Oh, thank you so much, Leslie, for calling. Dr. Shaw, comment from you?
Wonderful story, Leslie. Thank you for sharing that. Just hearing you talk about your sister going, and it sounds like maybe her love language might be acts of service or quality time, because she would physically be in the presence of your mom but be doing things for her. Your love language may be more physical touch, and therefore you had a different kind of relationship with your mom, you know, as she was getting towards the end of her journey. And it may be that, you know, different people in the family have different love languages, but they still may feel that same sort of warmth and love that you just described, that, you know, the way that your mom was able to express her recognition of your love has given you just wonderful memories. So I'd say, you know, embrace the differences you have within your family and just rejoice in the fact that you're able to still have relationship. Just a great story, though.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Leslie. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Question, comment, experience to share at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. I was thinking about Leslie's comments about her mother not liking to go out. I would take my mother to the zoo and on Saturdays, and it wasn't so much the the animals at the zoo that she loved, but and she, of course, she it was always like the first time she was there because she'd forgotten she'd been there before, but it was all the children. So she loved looking at the children and sort of interacting in that way. She always loved children, and so I finally realized that, and so that was we were going to the zoo, but we were really going to look at the children and not the animals.
That's very interesting. In the book, Larry, we talk about something called attachment, and attachment is a counseling concept. So, in particularly in the first 6 years of life, but really true throughout your early childhood, young adulthood, you develop attachment bonds to the people who are important in your life. So, as a child, that's going to be mom and dad and siblings. And then as you enter elementary and middle school, that's going to be the friendships that you develop, and then relationships with other extended family members. And then in young adulthood, it will be for whoever your chosen life partner is. And I wonder with your mom if because she was losing people in the present, she may have been thinking more about some of her early attachment relationships, like with her siblings or her own parents. And I've heard others describe their loved one having a love of having children around. And I've wondered if it's maybe comforting, it might have been comforting for your mom to almost think like a child, her own childhood, and be comforted by the presence of others who may, you know, at her stage of disease, be more like her age. And it's a wonderful story that you've shared and reinforces this notion of how important attachment bonds are,
yeah,
especially our early ones.
She and my dad were great dancers and loved to dance, and so music was very effective for her. But as I read your book, music is effective at improving dementia patients' mood and behavior, sort of in general, is it not?
Yes, it is. Music seems to be a sort of a love language. It could be words of affirmation. You know, a lot of us, many of us, love music. We begin to love music at a young age, and so when you remember songs of your own, say adolescence or young adulthood, maybe for your parents, songs that they love to dance to, that hearing those songs again would, in a sense, reattach them to a time in their life when they were more cognitively capable. And there's a YouTube video called Alive Inside, Henry's Story. If you just Google, enter Alive Inside Henry into the YouTube dialogue box, you'll come up with the story of this elderly man who also loved music. Music was a part of he and his wife's upbringing of their children, and music was a big part of his own life. And so he was, you know, for all practical purposes, looked like sort of the typical person in a nursing home, kind of slumped over in a wheelchair. And one of the paid caregivers at the nursing home got an iPad for him and some headphones and sort of plugged him into some songs from his earlier life that the family had shared he really loved. And you can see this on the YouTube video, that he really becomes alive inside, and he perks up and his eyes become wide, and he was able to talk again. He hadn't really verbalized for quite a long time. And what he said was that the music made him feel like there was a band of love around him. And it was just an emotional awakening that is a beautiful picture when you look at the YouTube video.
David in Park Falls, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Well, that was an excellent commentary right there. Thank you for that. But I just wanted to reinforce what Leslie had said about taking time just to be present. And, you know, for people to understand that just trusting that, being there, you know, when the person might open their eyes or show a little glimmer of awareness, is what you're doing it for, even if it takes hours. And it's okay to not, you know, not feel very like anything's productive, but to realize that just presence means a lot.
Mm. Thank you for that, Dave. And Dr. Shaw, you'd agree?
I would agree, and thanks for that comment, David. Makes me think about the notion of what we call the shrinking world. And so, you know, I think often loved ones will want to bring gifts or things to eat to their parent or spouse who has Alzheimer's disease. But as the disease progresses, that individual's world shrinks. And then, as David so nicely described, you know, in the very latest part of the disease, all that person really seems to care about is the relationship they have with the person who's sitting next to them. And it's very hard as Americans. We have very busy lives. We have, you know, very busy brains. But sounds like David had the experience where he was just able to savor the moment, maybe of just holding his loved one's hand or just, you know, looking them in the eyes and just, you know, these very simple things that can be so grounding for the person, you know, whose cognitive functions have really slipped away, but they still have an emotional core that's alive in them. So great, great and wise words from David.
Thank you so much for calling, David. Someone else wondered what happens when there isn't a good relationship to begin with the person, and you have some examples. You have a lot of really nice examples in the book, but one was of a wife and husband who didn't really get along very well, and the wife used, I think, some of your techniques and really kind of turned the love around.
Yes, and so I mean, within any family, any marriage relationship or any family unit, there's always going to be some relationships that are stronger and some that are not as strong. I think one of the earlier callers was saying she and her sister did more of the care for the parents or for the parent with Alzheimer's than the brothers did. You know, even within varying strengths of relationships within a family, you know, you can always mend relationships. It's never too late to say, look, maybe I haven't had the best relationship with my parent or my spouse, but, you know, this may be a time for forgiveness and for me to just serve them by expressing love. And in our counseling center, in the memory counseling program, part of what we do for every family that we assess is we say, why don't we come together and have a family meeting? And one of the very first things we do in family meetings is to say, well, what's your understanding of what your spouse or your parent, their diagnosis and their symptoms, and where are you in relationship with them right now? Because we can facilitate as counselors trying to mend or rebuild relationships so that for the last, you know, months or years of life that they may have with their loved one, they can reclaim some of maybe what was lost for whatever reason in earlier years.
Yeah.
Very important.
And on that note, we are going to have to close. I want to thank you so much. There are so many good ideas in your book and very helpful suggestions that, Dr. Shaw, that I really appreciate you co-authoring this book with others. And thank you so much for spending time with us today. I hope we have a chance to meet and talk again. Thank you.
Thank you.
The book is Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade, The Five Love Languages and the Alzheimer's Journey. I found it extremely interesting and helpful as well. Well, thank you so much for listening. And David Drake and Jamie Nack will join us to talk about wildlife issues tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us.